for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm Doug Gefeller. I'll be your host this afternoon. My partner, Rick Franzi, will be back next week and we'll continue to alternate in hosting the show each week. Thanks for being our guest. Today we have another great interview for you to listen to. Marty Snyder, president and founder of Communications Infrastructure Corporation, or CIC to keep it short. Marty's in his office in Santa Barbara, so let me just make sure he's connected. Marty, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Okay, I'll be back to you in just a minute. If you haven't listened before, the radio show is really an extension of what my partner Rick Franzi and I do when we're not hosting the show. We're business owners, just like many of you listening today. And we have been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here in Orange County, California, all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. That's www.executiveforums.com. Last year, Rick wrote the definitive book on CEO peer groups with the same title as this radio show, Critical Mass. And I would highly recommend that if you're interested in hearing more about these types of groups, that you read the book, which is now in its third printing. You can find it on Amazon.com. Just put in Rick Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, under author, and it'll take you right to it. As for me, I'm a master certified coach by the International Coach Federation and the immediate past president of the Orange County chapter. You can learn more about our coaching practice on our website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. Well, each week we invite leading business owners to join us on the air to discuss what's going on in their business. Much like our executive forums, our goal here is to learn best practices from leaders who are active in the trenches today facing the same issues that we're all dealing with. If you've missed any of the past broadcasts, you can go to www.latalkradio.com/critical. There you can listen live or you can download the broadcast that you've missed. So much for the commercial. So let's get started with Marty, who I've had the great pleasure of working with for 3 years. Marty's an innovative thinker, passionate about his business, his family, and our Lord. So, Marty, welcome to Critical Mass.
Thank you very much, Doug. That was a great introduction.
You make it very easy. So, tell the audience a little bit about your path to CIC.
Well, Doug, I started out as a carpenter, and now CIC is a boutique wireless telecommunications engineering firm. I say boutique because we're just around 100 employees. We have just north of 100 employees right now, and I think that makes us a small business still. But we serve the wireless telecommunications industry with custom engineering services and deployments. So we deploy wireless communication facilities too. And you asked me what my path to that was, and I guess I'd have to say that I've been an entrepreneur and a business owner my entire career. I did start as a carpenter as a young man years ago and moved into developing real estate and, you know, doing my own projects. And developing wireless communication sites was sort of a natural extension of that, which I got into about 14 years ago. I was invited to build some wireless cell sites for GTE MobileNet, which I did. And from there, the business started to develop into a wireless telecommunications consulting firm. So over the years, we have grown into a couple of specialties. As you know, any entrepreneur has to sort of bend, you know, bob and weave, I should say, with the times and with what the industry is doing. And so we've done just that over the years. We started out building wireless cell sites and managing the building of wireless cell sites. From there, we moved into technical engineering services. Involved in a wireless cell site are many different technologies, and we've specialized in a couple of them. One of them specifically is microwave engineering, and how cell sites work is a wireless cell site talks to the handset. So we as users who have cell phones and PDAs and Blackberries, our devices talk to an antenna site located somewhere in our vicinity, and everybody knows what it's like to not be near one of those towers when they can't get a coverage. You know, everyone knows what the bars mean.
Yeah,
but
I hate it.
There's all. Am I going? Can I? Let me just finish this thought, and then you can hit me with your next one.
No, keep going, Marty. This is good. You just hit a button when you said I didn't have any bars.
Okay. So what people don't often know is that that's just one portion of the network. A wireless phone company has cell sites, but then they also have a lot of other infrastructure that has to be built, developed, and connected in order to make the entire phone call work. So, for example, while your cell phone talks to a local cell site, that cell site needs to be connected to the wireless carrier switch, and then that wireless carrier switch needs to be connected to other switches on what we call the PSTN or the public switch telephone network, which makes the calls go through. In other words, when you pick up a phone and call someone, you're on a physical connection that connects your phone to the other person's phone, and that could be, you know, your friend on the other side of town, your mom in New York, your business partner in London, and the entire network of phone systems throughout the world is all interconnected together. And so what we do is, over the years, we've developed a knack or a skill set for engineering those interconnection circuits, the things that connect cell sites to the switch and then switches to other switches on the network, like, say, with AT&T or Verizon or something like that. And that's where our specialty comes in. We have learned to help carriers save money by interconnecting their cell sites at cheaper rates. Starting out as a young businessman and being an entrepreneur and owning my own business, and then growing that into a specialty where we develop cell sites and then developing technical capability as we built cell sites to do other things, that's sort of been our path for CIC.
So, Marty, let me understand. Basically, you started physically building cell sites, then you've sort of gravitated into, the engineering or design of systems. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And do you still build cell sites? Or, I mean, do you physically build anything and then own anything, or are you a design consultant kind of firm?
Well, that's an interesting question, because today we are a design consultant kind of firm, and we are still building cell sites, although much fewer these days. Most of the stuff we do at cell sites nowadays is an addition or a modification to an existing cell site. But as a services firm, we recognized that we were only as good as our next contract. And so we have been exploring the idea of entering into the telecommunications market as a company that owned assets, i.e. a company that built and owned its own networks that would then get monthly recurring revenue on the rent or lease of those networks to other phone companies. So we're actually on a path of developing our company into, or I should say, from a services firm into an asset-based ownership firm.
Do you think that I mean, is that going to be 100% transition, or will you always be in the design business?
Well, that's a – boy, there's a big question. We haven't – we've explored this in many different ways, and we've been working on it for about 3 years now. And each year we look at it a different way and come – and the ideas tend to change with the times. Today, what we think we'll be doing is we think we'll maintain the services business and we'll leverage the services business to be building its own infrastructure, but create a separate business for the infrastructure ownership, wherein there would be the end result would be two separate businesses that that were unique and independent.
Now, you know that, you know, this is fascinating to me because it sort of sounds like the David versus Goliath story. I mean, when you talk about owning the physical structure, the systems, I think of, you know, the big giant firms. I mean, how can you compete there?
Well, it is the David and Goliath kind of story. And that actually will present some challenges and is presenting some challenges for us. But I always, you know, I always go back to a couple of stories that I've heard. Well, for one, you know, we take a company like Sprint, for example, and, you know, 20-some years ago, Sprint didn't exist. I think of a story I learned once by a coach of mine who told me a story about the beginning of a company in the 50s that announced to the world that, and to a group of investors that they were going to go into the heavy equipment machinery, heavy construction equipment like large tractors and backhoes and heavy equipment like that, road graders, and that they were just a dream and an idea, and the founder got a group of investors into a room and he said, in the first year we're going to start the company, in the second year we're going to have 35% of the market share in the United States, and in our fifth year we're going to have the majority of the market share in the United States. And that was the beginning of Caterpillar, and they had achieved every one of their goals. So, you know, I gotta say, I gotta dream big. We gotta, you know, we gotta approach it like we can do it. One thing that is playing in our favor, and that is in our particular niche, we do microwave backhaul for wireless carriers. And in our niche, we are one of the largest microwave backhaul integrators in the United States. So we do have a reputation for scale. We do have a reputation for capability, and we are typically the trusted advisor type of vendor for our customers. And so as we've approached our customers, who are the big wireless carriers, they've all been supportive. None of the wireless carriers have said to us, well, you're not big enough. Now, we are getting into deeper conversations with one particular wireless carrier, a name you know, I can't mention it here, but they are now beginning, as we get deeper into conversations, asking about that capability. You know, you're not a giant. You know, how can we know that you can operate this network for us? And there'll be a number of tests we'll have to pass in order to get through that hurdle. But it's a very real challenge that we face, but not an insurmountable challenge.
So, you know, maybe 10, 15 years from now, we can be telling the story about how we heard Marty Snyder talk on LA Talk Radio about these plans, huh?
Well, that would be kind of nice, wouldn't it?
Talk a little bit about your business model of how you run the firm and what your particular skills and involvements is about. I mean, you know, it's always fascinating. Each president, each founder of a company sort of has a different technical background and therefore ends up running the company in a unique way. Describe a little bit kind of your business structure and your own role as president of the company.
Wow, okay. Well, my our business structure, no, but let me start with my role and my strengths. I view my strengths as grounded in some sound principles of relationship. I personally go by the honesty is the best policy philosophy. And so I spend a lot of time taking care of relationships, and that by no means means that I'm perfect. I'm sure that there'll be some people listening here that have been upset with me in the past, and maybe even today. And so I have no claim on you know being a great relationship guy, but they are important to me. Relationships are important. Integrity is important. My word's important to me. And I take it seriously. And in general, people know that I'll do what I say I'm going to do if I can, and they can trust me at least. And so I leverage that. I also have my other skill set is I generally see the quickest way to get somewhere. I'm the type of guy that gets in a car, and I know exactly where I'm going, and I know the quickest way to get there. And so I've had a very clear vision of where the company needs to go each year, and I tend to have a very clear idea of how to get there. And so I articulate that to my team. I'm very hands-on, very actively involved in day-to-day activities, so I make it a point to converse with my team as much as I can. Again, I'm not perfect at that. I do, though, have this pet peeve of mine in the company, and that is I hate when the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. So I really work hard, and we can never avoid that. You know what? We're humans, and I think everybody just has to accept that that's going to be, you know, what you face when you get into any organization, you know, whether it's for a business organization or a family or, you know, who knows, it can be anywhere. But I really strive hard to make sure that everybody understands what's going on. And so that's how I run my business. Now, we're structured where we have a back office, and our back office is run by one individual, a great gal named Deborah Hatchell. And Deborah's just got a penchant for just getting things done and being very organized about it. So she runs all the back office stuff. And then I have a front-end group doing the operations. And Brad Fugit is a gentleman that runs operations for us. Again, another great guy who's just got a penchant for getting things done. And then I have a sales guy and a sales group, and that's run by Mike Lodato. And Mike has a go-getter, you know, in terms of going out and going after sales. So the my team is those three folks, and then under that, each of those individuals, I let them build their own organizations, and then I stay in touch with all that organization. Actually, I have to say that we were a bootstrapped company. We started from the ground up. So I actually built a number of people into the company that before those people came on board. And although Deborah's been on board for about 8 years, we've had an organization where I was directly managing day-to-day activities before those other folks got here. And so I still maintain contact with everybody. I go up and down the organization. I try to call. I try to stay in touch with all the people and listen to what's going on and meet the needs. That's a tall order, too, so I'm not perfect at that. There's no way you can really cover all the bases, but you do the best you can. And I view myself just in terms, so that's our structure. You know, so we have an operations, we have a back office, and we have a sales arm. And then I keep everybody, you know, try to keep everybody on the same page, and then I give everybody the freedom to do what they feel needs, you know, what they feel is best that needs to be done in any given situation. I coach, and oftentimes I go in on sales calls or I go into an operational mode and fill in where things need to be filled in. Sometimes we're shorthanded, and I pick up the slack, say someone goes on vacation or something like that. And I view myself as really working for those people. My job is sort of make their job easier, get things, you know, I get out of their way, and I just supply them with what they need to get done. So,
Marty, great description of a CEO position. That I couldn't have said it better myself. But, you know, one other thing, because I you know, we've worked together, so I know a little bit about your organization. One of the things that's always fascinated me is just the sort of geographic challenges that you face. I mean, you're in Santa Barbara. You're dealing with clients that are all over the country, and not all of your people are located there. How does that work? I kind of think maybe you have the formula for many companies of the future.
Well, I don't know if we got the formula, because I'll tell you something, that's the toughest thing going today. You know, Doug, our customers are all over the country, so we really got to be all over the country. You know, I've been in all 50 states in the last 15 years, and including Puerto Rico, so 51. And we work in all those states, so we got to be in all those states. And operating the if you will, the virtual company has its challenges. It's tough. And you really got to make a lot of compromises in terms of communication. That's where I brought up before the right hand knowing what the left hand's doing. That's where it becomes especially challenging. But we do operate a virtual company. Like you said, I'm in Santa Barbara. We have over 100 people employed, and only 8 of them show up at an office in Santa Barbara. So we also, though, have a facility down in Dallas. It's more of a job-related, a project-related facility, I should say, although we have a warehouse there, and we do some, and we have a lab where we can test telecom equipment. But we rely heavily on web-based systems. We're probably running, all told, about 10-plus different web-based systems, so we have an entire, in HR alone, I think we probably have 4 web-based systems, web-based time reporting and expense reporting, web-based for employees to get on and manage their benefits, web-based where employees can go on and look at their insurance, or another one where they can go in and change their, you know, tax status and that sort of thing. So that's in the HR. Then we've built our own web-based systems for operations, so for project tracking and file sharing. That's a big issue with us. And then we have, we make extensive use of conference calling, of cellular technology. We also use the Citrix product called GoToMeeting. And so we're doing a lot of desktop sharing, and as we get in meetings, we can, you know, talk and look at the same document or the same engineering drawing and mark it up. And then Skype. We probably have most of our engineers are all on Skype, and they're all on at the same time, so they're all talking to each other like they're in the same room. And they really take advantage of the technology probably more than anybody. But I got to tell you, it is tough to schedule meetings and to, you know, run a well-run company remotely. But somehow I think we managed to get by.
Well, you know, I know you've got a challenge. And let me just take a moment to say I want to thank you for adjusting your travel schedule so that you could be on a landline today. I know in the 3 years, I think I very seldom talked to you on a landline. You most often are on your cell phones in an airport somewhere. But so thanks for making yourself available today. That I appreciate that. And it is a challenge to run a virtual company, but it does give you an edge in recruiting top talent, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it does. We you know, I made a commitment a number of years ago. I like building an organization around really smart people. And, you know, you're in our company, you know, we're services-based, so my only resources are our people. We have the best. I mean, I've got some really great folks. And I made a deliberate statement about 10 years ago. I said, I'll never make anybody move. And and I've, so far, I don't think I've gone back on that. And we've got, when I find someone that really fits the role and they live in Chicago, say, you know, I'm not making a move to Santa Barbara or Texas or wherever else we might need them. And so we figure it out. But it has enabled us to recruit some of the best because, you know, people nowadays, you know, I've got four daughters through high school. There's no way you can move your family around. And this business is anything but stationary. You know, people are transitory all the time. And when you can tell somebody, hey, you don't have to go anywhere, their families, you know, are better off, they're better off. So, and then it's good for us. So,
yeah, that's great. And you know, and that brings up another point is that I know that you're always on the search for talent. Do you want to share a little bit about that? I mean, you're in a technology field. Hot people go pretty quick. talent is sometimes scarce in particular fields. How do you keep the best? How do you find the best people?
Well, part of our you're right. We are always on the search for talent. And especially in technology where the technology is changing, we have to change, and therefore we have to find new and better and resources in that type of mode. So what we do is we take advantage of the Internet heavily. We are a big subscriber to the monster.com, which is a large resume hiring recruiting type website where people go to share that kind of information, resumes and their careers and that sort of thing. Job seekers in our in our business go use the Monster board to look for new jobs. We go there to find people. But that's just where it begins, really. We take very good care of our people. And again, knowing that, you know, our resources are really our best assets, we try to do the best. We pay competitively. We try to keep a really great team spirit and camaraderie. You know, we honestly care about people, and that goes to everything. You know, that impacts everything we do. If we're hiring someone new and they need to have information in a computer, they've got it. You know, instantly we figure out how to get it to them. When we're recruiting and someone wants to come into our website and apply, all the information about working for us is there on the website. We give them access to it so they can see and they know every detail about the job, what we provide, what we expect of them. It's all very clearly laid out. So being really open and clear is part of the recruiting process. I tell you, Doug, we got people that have come and gone in the company, like all companies have, and most of the people say about CIC, they say, you guys treat us better than anyone's ever treated us. And what that does is that generates a really great word of mouth for the company, and people hear that we're hiring, and they want to come and work for us. Our industry is very small, and you know, bad news travels really fast. Good news doesn't travel so fast, but bad news travels fast, and what you don't want to do is you don't want to burn bridges in our business. So our recruiting starts by how we care for people. We take advantage of Monster and other web tools. We have our own recruiting systems built into our website, so we run people through everything remotely and it's convenient for them. And that's sort of how we stay on top of the technology change and the personnel needs.
Okay. And, you know, I can just sort of add, because I've seen you do it a number of times, you're not afraid to hire ahead of the need. I've seen where you've found a great talent someplace in the States and know you're going to need them in 6 months, and you're after them today as soon as they become available.
Yeah, well, that's come back to bite us a few times. But, you know, I'm probably a little bit more of a risk taker than most people. But yeah, we have been known to stay ahead of the curve. And that goes back to that whole thing of, you know, typically when I know where I'm going, I know how to get there. And I might be a little bit hasty in that, too.
Hey, speaking of risk taking, have you done any rock climbing lately?
Yep, sure have. I got in some ice climbing this winter. I was at the Ouray Ice Climbing Festival in Colorado, and I was out in Las Vegas a few weeks ago and got in a day of climbing out there. I'm headed to Colorado next week, and I'm bringing my stuff with me. I hope to get a little bit of climbing in there, too.
Great. You know, I hate to ask the question, but since we're talking about risks and you mentioned the term bad news, how's this economy affecting your company and your industry?
Well, it's impacting us. You know, at first, we felt like we were in a fairly protected niche. You know, the economy is not doing well. You know, unemployment has skyrocketed, and however, the wireless technology sector has been faring well. And so, on that side, the fact that we're in the space that we're in, we have not been impacted as much. But on the flip side to that, it really has impacted us a lot. And one is in how we manage our money. You know, I think that necessity being the mother of invention, and we have been risk takers in the past, and when you're doing well, you tend to be a little bit looser with expenses, a little bit more risk taking with, you know, advancing, you know, spending on things that you may not need right away. But the banks have all tightened up, and we're looking at ourselves and our profitability and talking, you know, openly with our bank. And we've realized that we really need to rein it in and be very budget conscious about what we're doing. So while we have been a bit more of a risk-taking indie, that's sort of changing during these times. We're really having to tighten the belt, really lock, you know, cut expenses that are unnecessary. Even, you know, we're learning having to get really tight on our headcount, which is a big portion, the biggest portion of our expenses, and be super efficient in how we operate. So that's just in the last 2 months, we've really been working hard on that, and we're rolling out a new plan right now that that I've been working on for about 2 months that will change us quite a bit, just so that we maintain profitability and the confidence of our bank resources. And so it's important. You know, we can't – these times have definitely impacted us, and as they are everyone, I'm sure.
Do you think, and I know you're, as you've mentioned already on the show here, that you're a big user of all the current technology. Do you think it's really increasing personal productivity?
Definitely. That's my shortest answer for today. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, I've heard that the argument, and you know, a lot of people go, you know, there's a lot of anti-cell phone people out there. But even though everybody has one, you know, I think we're over 90% penetration rate on the cell phone in the United States. Not quite up there with Denmark, that's like over 100% penetration, but, you know, almost everybody has a cell phone nowadays. My 11-year-old daughters had cell phones. And people, you know, and you go to a restaurant and you'll see no cell phones, and you know, some people complain that it's an invasion of privacy, but I got to tell you, the cell phone allows me to go to a ball game with my daughter, or be at a dance recital, or do these other things and actually have a better quality of life because I can get some things done while I'm gone. And I know it's making us more productive. I think this, our nation as a whole, while we don't have a manufacturing base in the United States, you know, we know that that's been outsourced, you know, overseas and down south, but Americans are still very, very productive and, you know, work very hard and produce intellectual property like no other country on this planet. So I think it makes us more productive, and I think it's freeing as well at the same time.
So you bring up an interesting point. I mean, it's probably a very naive question on my part, but I mean, if we've achieved 90% penetration in the cell phone market and 100% is pretty much max, I mean, what is the growth in the telecommunications business? I mean, is it over because everybody now has a cell phone and it's now done?
Oh, no, it's just beginning. It's just beginning. Now, you know, everyone has a cell phone. That's the beginning. Now it's what are we going to be doing with those cell phones? And, you know, the iPhone is the classic example of that, right? We are now looking at thousands of apps for the iPhone, and then and BlackBerry, you know, RIM has opened up their own application store now, and LG and Nokia and, you know, all the other companies are following suit. A friend of mine told me the other day, he said he had an iPhone app that showed him where the nearest public toilet was. And so it's about what we're going to do with those phones. You know, the future now on the horizon is the phones will start to replace the credit card. You know, you'll have a little RF, you'll push a button and it'll send a little Bluetooth or whatever, you know, signal to the cashier, and you'll complete your transaction. You'll be transferring money from bank account to credit card. There's all these various different things that we can now do, not to mention what business applications there are for, you know, doing work with the cell phone. And then with the rollout of 4G, the fourth generation of wireless services, we're going to have extreme broadband services so that our speeds, our data rates, are going to be so high, they're going to be making DSL and cable modems look slow. And so that's where it's going. You know, entertainment, all these networks are converging into multi-use places for where we get entertainment, we do business, we do personal stuff, social networking, you name it.
So as this continues, I mean, basically, is the infrastructure now built for that and it really is a matter of just technical improvements, or is it going to require new infrastructure?
Oh, no. The infrastructure doesn't exist for all this. And hence why we talked about earlier in the show here about our company going in and actually building some of that infrastructure and owning it.
Yeah.
The infrastructure needs to be built. And for example, I just mentioned 4G, fourth generation technology. That's a whole new set of infrastructure that this country, the United States, is just beginning to deploy. And we're looking at, you know, a 5 to 10 year, maybe not quite 10 years, but at least 5 years of development of that infrastructure and the support structures that will be needed to support it. So you have the 4G radio infrastructure and spectrum at the cell sites, And then you have the backhaul infrastructure, fiber optic, wireless microwave. All these things are yet to be built. We're about to face probably the largest fiber optic deployment in the history of the world here in the United States over the next 5 to 10 years.
So does that mean I should run out and buy some backhoe so I can be digging all that stuff up and replacing it?
You bet. That's what we're doing.
Well, that's a picture that's pretty darn encouraging. I mean, it sounds like it's an industry that basically is reinventing itself, that's not maturing at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that seems to be what it's doing. And it's limited only to the imagination and the creativity of the users.
But, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, let's look at your own firm. As in this economy with the banks tightening up, where's the money going to come from for companies like yours to get in and build those infrastructures?
Well, you know, that's funny because, you know, we've been out looking for money. We've done our roadshow, so to speak. We've been involved in that investment banking arena, and we're talking to the folks out there. And the bottom line is there's money out there. There's lots of money out there. And while Wall Street may not have been faring so well, that's not the only place money is. And I mean, you go to middle America and you can talk to farmers and landowners that are billionaires. And, you know, there's still some commodities dealers that just have gobs and gobs of cash in there, and they've been conservative and stayed out of Wall Street, and they've been wise in saving their money and putting it into assets that, you know, are somewhat liquid. And, you know, I think that the wealth is there. And, you know, where there is demand, there will always be resources to meet the demand. And I think that's really the key, is the demand. When consumers are showing that they're willing to pay for it, you know, the money tends to flow into those markets.
So you think a lot of the funding may come from private investment kind of funding?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. The wise people that have made wise choices with their resources. That's where the money will come from.
Great. Marty, can you share for a couple of minutes? I know we hadn't talked about this question, but what are some of the tough lessons you learned or things you wish you had done differently? Or would do differently now in starting your firm and getting to this point?
Oh, boy, you're asking the real where the rubber meets the road questions. the ones, the embarrassing ones that I got to share. You know, I can't remember where I was the other night. I was with a friend or with my daughter and one of her friends or something, and someone was kicking themselves that they made a mistake and lost about a few hundred dollars because they made a mistake. And I go, honey, I've lost millions of dollars making mistakes. I go easy on yourself. You know, I don't even know where to begin. To be honest with you, I guess the big ones here. Let me try to sum up some of the big ones without getting too specific.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't want to embarrass
funny.
You.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, you can go out and find a proverb, you know, about how to manage money, and you know the Bible is a classic example of, you know, there's thousands of lessons in the Bible about how to manage your money. I'm sure every other culture and religion has the same thing, and you have. You know, you have on the TV and radio, you have, you know, all kinds of, you know, you have Sue Zorman and you have all these other type of people who are sharing wisdom, you know, about how to manage money. And the crazy thing is, there's really only about 10 things you got to do when you manage your money. And the most important one is spend less than you earn, you know? and all these people, all the Proverbs and the radio pundits and all that, they're all saying the same thing. And they're saying it because it's smart. And I think that as a business owner, you really have to watch how you manage your money. And for me, I think in my past, you know, I've probably violated some of those rules, those wise, you know, sayings, if you will. And you know, if you don't, as a business owner, you don't ever want to forget the fundamentals. You know, you got to add value to something. And if I'm not adding value to my customer, I've got no point in having a customer. And then I've got to be able to deliver that value for a cost, and I've got to be able to be paid for more than it costs me to deliver it, while at the same time, you know, being perceived value of my customer. And it's so easy for us to just forget these simple things. You can get into it's so easy to get, not to lose track of that, get excited about something else, put your focus and attention on something else. And there's an awful lot of distractions and an awful lot of things competing for our time and our mind share, and that can distract us from those fundamental principles. Add value to your customer. And by the way, that's always changing. So you got to be on the ball and understand what's going on with your customer, or you're not going to be around much longer, because you're going to not be adding value, you know, for very long if you can't change with the times and with their needs. And you got to be able to do it at a reasonable cost that you can, you can live with.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that helped you, but
Marty, it would help me if I could apply them on a daily basis. But I think you hit some really. I mean, it's basic, but hey, it's the truth. Spend less than you're making. Add value to your customers and make sure that what you're delivering costs you less than what they're willing to pay for it. I mean, yeah. Rules to live by. Absolutely. And I know one of the things that, you know, I have no ability to judge your company's technical competence. That's way outside my understanding. But I know from my exposure to your company that the amount of time that you spend staying in touch with your customers, not to just meet an order, but to find out what they're doing, what they're thinking, and where they're going, is probably the same amount of time that you spend staying in touch with your employees. And I think that's an interesting formula. If you take that
communication, they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, yeah, for us, you kill two birds with one stone. You know, we're a service business, so just in our day-to-day service, we're in touch with our customer, right?
Yep.
And in order to deliver that service, I've got to stay in day-to-day contact with our staff, you know, our employees. And you're right. Those things are happening, and those things are completely essential.
Hey, Marty, as we kind of wind up here, let me ask you, first, how do we get in touch with you? Your website is www.cicusa.com.
That's correct.
And how else would people get in touch with you?
Well, they can pick up the phone. our phone number is 805-961-9101. We do have a system there that'll get you through to me. If you just listen to the directory, you can reach me. If I don't pick up, the phone does ring my cell phone, and tells me that there's a message there, so I'll get it. And then I think that's it. I think nowadays, okay, if you want to come, you know, there's really only three ways: the web, the phone, and our building. You know, you could come to Santa Barbara and meet us direct.
I've always enjoyed that. What? Anything else that you want to kind of wrap us up with that I didn't ask about that you want to get out there and tell our listeners?
Well, Doug, you always probe pretty deep, so I enjoy that about you. That's one of the best things I've enjoyed about working with you, especially as a coach. I appreciate that, and you always dig in deep. I think you've dug in pretty deep. I can't think of anything else I'd like to share. But no, I just thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit about us.
Marty, I appreciate knowing more about your company. I certainly have a better clue about the telecommunications business and where it's going. And it's been a fascinating afternoon, like it always is when I talk to you. So you continue to educate me and teach me. So thank you very much for continuing that today. We've enjoyed having you as a guest here on Critical Mass. Thank you, Doug.
Listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi.